probably wasn't expecting to find that two other armies beat him to the city, Ham noted. Ellen nodded. What do we do, then?
I don't see that we can do anything, Your Majesty, Doxson said, shaking his head. Caesar's report doesn't give me much hope that we'll be able to reason with Jastis, and with the siege we're already under, there is little we can do.
He might just turn around and go, Ham said, with two armies already here.
Caesar looked hesitant.
He knew about the armies, Lord Hammond. He seemed to trust in his Kolos over the human armies.
With 20,000 Kolos, Club said, he could probably take either of those other armies. But he'd have trouble with both of them, Ham said. That would give me pause if I were him. By showing up with a pile of volatile Kolos, he could easily worry Set and Straff enough that they would join forces against him. Which would suit us just fine, Club said. The more that other people fight, the better off we are.
Elland sat back. He felt a looming anxiety, and it was good to have Vin next to him, arm around him, even if she didn't say much. Sometimes he felt stronger simply because of her presence.
20,000 Kolos.
This single threat scared him more than either of the other armies.
This could be a good thing, Ham said. If Jastis were to lose control of those beasts near Luthadel, there's a good chance they'd attack one of those other armies.
Agreed, Breeze said tiredly. I think we need to keep stalling. Draw out this siege until the Kolos army arrives. One more army in the mix means only more advantage for us.
I don't like the idea of Kolos in the area, Elland said, shivering slightly, no matter what advantage they offer us. If they attack the city...
I say we worry about that when and if they arrive, Doxson said. For now, we have to continue our plan as we intended. His Majesty meets with Straff, trying to manipulate him into a covert alliance with us. With luck, the imminent Kolos presence will make him more willing to deal.
Ellen nodded. Straff had agreed to meet, and they'd set a date for a few days away. The Assembly was angry that he hadn't consulted with them about the time and place, but there was little they could do about the matter.
Anyway, Ellen finally said, sighing, you said you have other news, Sayes? Better, hopefully?
Sayes had paused. A cook finally walked over, setting a plate of food before him. Steamed barley with strips of steak and some steamed legettes. The scents were enough to make Ellen a little hungry. He nodded thankfully to the palace chef, who had insisted on preparing the meal himself despite the late hour, and who waved to his staff and began to withdraw. Sayes had sat quietly, waiting to speak until the staff were again out of earshot.
I hesitate to mention this, Your Majesty, for your burdens already seem great.
You might as well just tell me, Ellen said.
Sayes had nodded.
I fear that we may have exposed the world to something when we killed the Lord Ruler, Your Majesty. Something unanticipated.
Breeze raised a tired eyebrow.
Unanticipated? You mean other than ravaging Kolos, power-hungry despots and bandits?
Caesar paused.
Yes. I speak of items a little more nebulous, I fear. There is something wrong with the mists.
Vin perked up slightly beside Ellen.
What do you mean? I have been following a trail of events, Caesar explained.
He looked down as he spoke, as if embarrassed.
I have been performing an investigation, you might say. You see, I have heard numerous reports of the mists coming during the daytime.
Ham shrugged.
That happens sometimes. There are foggy days, especially in the fall.
That is not what I mean, Lord Hammond, Caesar said. There is a difference between the mist and ordinary fog. It is difficult to spot, perhaps, but it is noticeable to a careful eye. The mist is thicker, and, well, it moves in larger patterns, Vin said quietly, like rivers in the sky. It never just hangs in one place. It floats in the breeze, almost like it makes the breeze.
And it can't enter buildings, Club said. Or tense. It evaporates soon after it does.
Yes, Sazed said. When I first heard these reports of Daymist, I assumed that the people were just letting their superstitions get out of control. I have known many Ska who refused to go out on a foggy morning. However, I was curious about the reports, so I traced them to a village in the south. I taught there for some time, and never received confirmation of the stories. So I made my way from that place.
He paused, frowning slightly.
Your Majesty, please do not think me mad. During those travels I passed a secluded valley, and saw what I swear was mist, not fog. It was moving across the landscape, creeping toward me, during the full light of day.
Elland glanced at Ham. He shrugged.
Don't look at me.
Breeze snorted.
He was asking your opinion, my dear man.
Well, I don't have one.
Some philosopher you are.
I'm not a philosopher, Ham said. I just like to think about things.
Well, think about this, then, Breeze said.
Elland glanced at Sazed. Have those two always been this way?
Honestly, I am not certain, Your Majesty, Sazed said, smiling slightly. I have known them for only slightly longer than yourself.
Yes, they've always been like this, Doxson said, sighing quietly. If anything, they've gotten worse over the years.
Aren't you hungry? Elland asked, nodding to Sazed's plate.
I can eat once our discussion is finished, Sazed said.
Sazed, you're not a servant anymore, Vin said. You don't have to worry about things like that.
It is not a matter of serving or not, Lady Vin, Sazed said. It is a matter of being polite.
Sazed, Elland said.
Yes, Your Majesty.
He pointed at the plate.
Eat. You can be polite another time. Right now you look famished, and you're among friends.
Sazed paused, giving Elland an odd look.
Yes, Your Majesty, he said, picking up a knife and spoon.
Now, Elland began, why does it matter if you saw mist during the day? We know that the things the Ska say aren't true. There's no reason to fear the mist.
The Ska may be more wise than we credit them, Your Majesty, Sazed said, taking small careful bites of food. It appears that the mist has been killing people.
What?
Vin asked, leaning forward.
I have never seen it myself, Lady Vin, Sazed said. But I have seen its effects, and have collected several separate reports. They all agree that the mist has been killing people.
That's preposterous, Breeze said. Mist is harmless.
That is what I thought, Lord Ladrian, Sazed said. However, several of the reports are quite detailed. The incidents always occurred during the day, and each one tells of the mist curling around some unfortunate individual who then died, usually in a seizure. I gathered interviews with witnesses myself.
Elland frowned. From another man, he'd dismissed the news. But Sazed, he was not a man that one dismissed. Vin, sitting beside Elland, watched the conversation with interest, chewing slightly on her bottom lip. Oddly, she didn't object to Sazed's words, though the others seemed to be reacting as Breeze had.
It doesn't make sense, Saze, Ham said. Thieves, nobles, and allomancers have gone out in the mists for centuries.
Indeed they have, Lord Hammond, Sazed said with a nod. The only explanation I can think of involves the Lord Ruler. I heard no substantive reports of mist deaths before the collapse, but I have had little trouble finding them since. The reports are concentrated in the outer dominances, but the incidents appear to be moving inward. I found one very disturbing incident several weeks to the south, where an entire village seems to have been trapped in their hovels by the mists.
But why would the Lord Ruler's death have anything to do with the mists? Breeze asked.
I am not certain, Lord Ladrian, Sazed said, but it is the only connection I have been able to hypothesize.
Breeze frowned.
I wish you wouldn't call me that. I apologize, Lord Breeze, Sazed said. I am still accustomed to calling people by their full names.
Your name is Ladrian? Vin asked.
Unfortunately, Breeze said. I've never been fond of it, and with dear Sazed putting Lord before it, well, the alliteration makes it even more atrocious.
Is it me? Ellen said. Or are we going off on even more tangents than usual tonight?
We get that way when we're tired, Breeze said with a yawn.
Either way, our good Terraceman must have his facts wrong. Mist doesn't kill.
I can only report what I have discovered, Sazed said. I will need to do some more research.
So you'll be staying? Vin asked, obviously hopeful. Sazed nodded.
What about teaching? Breeze asked, waving his hand. When you left, I recall that you said something about spending the rest of your life traveling, or some nonsense like that.
Sazed blushed slightly, glancing down again.
That duty will have to wait, I fear.
You're welcome to stay as long as you want, Sazed, Ellen said, shooting a glare at Breeze. If what you say is true, then you'll be doing a greater service through your studies than you would by traveling.
Perhaps, Sazed said.
Though, Ham noted with a chuckle, you probably could have picked a safer place to set up shop, one that isn't being pushed around by 2 armies and 20,000 Koloss.
Sazed smiled, and Ellen gave an obligatory chuckle. He said that the incidents involving the mist were moving inward, toward the center of the Empire. Toward us. Something else to worry about.
What's going on?
A voice suddenly asked. Ellen turned toward the kitchen doorway, where disheveled-looking Aurean stood.
I heard voices. Is there a party?
We were just discussing matters of state interest, my dear, Breeze said quickly.
The other girl is here,
Aurean said, pointing at Vin.
Why didn't you invite me?
Ellen frowned. She heard voices? The guest quarters aren't anywhere near the kitchens. And Aurean was dressed, wearing a simple noblewoman's gown. She'd taken the time to get out of her sleeping clothing, but she'd left her hair disheveled. Perhaps to make herself look more innocent? I'm starting to think like Vin, Ellen told himself with a sigh. As if to corroborate his thoughts, he noticed Vin narrowing her eyes at the new girl.
Go back to your rooms, dear, Breeze said soothingly. Don't trouble His Majesty.
Aurean sighed dramatically, but turned and did as he asked, trailing off into the hallway. Ellen turned back to Sazed, who was watching the girl with a curious expression. Ellen gave him an ask-later look, and the Terraceman turned back to his meal. A few moments later, the group began to break up. Vin hung back with Ellen as the others left.
I don't trust that girl,
Vin said as a couple of servants took Sazed's pack and guided him away. Ellen smiled, turning to look down at Vin.
Do I have to say it?
She rolled her eyes.
I know. You don't trust anyone, Vin. This time I'm right. She was dressed, but her hair was disheveled. She must have done that intentionally.
I noticed.
You did?
She sounded impressed. Ellen nodded.
She must have heard the servants waking up Breeze and Clubs, so she got up. That means she spent a good half an hour eavesdropping. She kept her hair mussed so that we'd assume that she'd just come down.
Vin opened her mouth slightly, then frowned, studying him.
You're getting better, she eventually said.
Either that, or Miss Aurean just isn't very good.
Vin smiled.
I'm still trying to figure out why you didn't hear her, Ellen noted.
The cooks, Vin said. Too much noise. Besides, I was a little distracted by what Sazed was saying.
And what do you think of it?
Vin paused.
I'll tell you later.
All right, Ellen said.
To Vin's side, the Convo rose and stretched its wolfhound body.
Why did she insist on bringing Orsure to the meeting, he wondered. Wasn't it just a few weeks ago that she couldn't stand the thing?
The wolfhound turned, glancing at the kitchen windows. Vin followed its gaze. Going back out? Elland asked. Vin nodded.
I don't trust this night. I'll stay near your balcony in case there's trouble.
She kissed him, then she moved away. He watched her go, wondering why she had been so interested in Sazed's stories, wondering what it was she wasn't telling him. Stop it, he told himself. Perhaps he was learning her lessons a little too well. Of all the people in the palace, Vin was the last one he needed to be paranoid about. However, every time he felt like he was beginning to figure Vin out, he realized just how little he understood her. And that made everything else seem a little more depressing. With a sigh, he turned to seek out his rooms, where his half-finished letter to the assembly waited to be completed.
Perhaps I should not have spoken of the mists, Sazed thought, following a servant up the stairs. Now I've troubled the king about something that might just be my delusion.
They reached the top of the stairs, and the servant asked if he wished a bath drawn. Sazed shook his head. In most other circumstances, he would have welcomed the opportunity to get clean. However, running all the way to the Central Dominance, being captured by the Koloss, then marching the rest of the way up to Luthadel, had left him wearied to the farthest fringe of exhaustion. He'd barely had the strength to eat. Now he just wanted to sleep. The servant nodded and led Sazed down a side corridor. What if he was imagining connections that didn't exist? Every scholar knew that one of the greatest dangers in research was the desire to find a specific answer. He had not imagined the testimonies he had taken, but had he exaggerated their importance? What did he really have? The words of a frightened man who had seen his friend die of a seizure? The testimony of a lunatic crazed to the point of cannibalism? The fact remained that Sazed himself had never seen the mists kill. The servant led him to a guest chamber, and Sazed thankfully bid the man good night. He watched the man walk away, holding only a candle, his lamp left for Sazed to use. During most of Sazed's life, he had belonged to a class of servants prized for their refined sense of duty and decorum. He'd been in charge of households and manors, supervising servants just like the one who had led him to his rooms. Another life, he thought. He had always been a little frustrated that his duties as a steward had left him little time for study. How ironic it was that he should help overthrow the final empire, then find himself with even less time. He reached to push open the door and froze almost immediately. There was already a light inside the room. Did they leave a lamp on for me? He wondered. He slowly pushed the door open. Someone was waiting for him.
Tyndall, Sazed said quietly.
She sat beside the room's writing desk, collected and neatly dressed as always.
Sazed,
she replied as he stepped in, shutting the door. Suddenly he was even more acutely aware of his dirty robes.
You responded to my request, he said. And you ignored mine.
Sazed didn't meet her eyes. He walked over, setting his lamp on top of the room's bureau.
I noticed the king's new clothing, and he appears to have gained a bearing to match them. You have done well, I think. We are only just started, she said dismissively. You were right about him. King Venture is a very good man, Sazed said,
walking to the wash basin to wipe down his face. He welcomed the cold water. Dealing with Tyndall was bound to tire him even further.
Good men can make terrible kings, Tyndall noted. But bad men cannot make good kings, Sazed said. It is better to start with a good man and work on the rest, I think. Perhaps, Tyndall said.
She watched him with her normal hard expression. Others thought her cold, harsh even, but Sazed had never seen that in her. Considering what she had been through, he found it remarkable, amazing even, that she was so confident. Where did she get it?
Sazed, Sazed, she said. Why did you return to the Central Dominance? You know the directions the Synod gave you. You are supposed to be in the Eastern Dominance, teaching the people on the borders of the Burnlands. That is where I was, Sacid said. And now I am here. The South will get along for a time without me, I think.
Oh? Tyndall asked. And who will teach them irrigation techniques so they can produce enough food to survive the cold months? Who will explain to them basic lawmaking principles so that they may govern themselves? Who will show them how to reclaim their lost faiths and beliefs? You were always so passionate about that.
Sacid set down the washcloth.
I will return to teach them when I am certain there is not a greater work I need to do.
What greater work could there be? Tyndall demanded.
This is our life's duty, Sacid. This is the work of our entire people. I know that Luthadel is important to you, but there is nothing for you here. I will care for your king. You must go.
I appreciate your work with King Venture, Sacid said. My course has little to do with him, however. I have other research to do. Tyndall frowned, eyeing him with a cool stare.
You're still looking for this phantom connection of yours, this foolishness with the mists.
There is something wrong, Tyndall, he said.
No, Tyndall said, sighing. Can't you see, Sacid? You spent 10 years working to overthrow the final empire. Now you can't content yourself with regular work. So you have invented some grand threat to the land. You're afraid of being irrelevant.
Sacid looked down. Perhaps. If you are correct, then I will seek the forgiveness of the Synod. I should probably seek it anyway, I think.
Oh, Sacid, Tyndall said, shaking her head slightly. I can't understand you. It makes sense when young fireheads like Vedzan and Rindel buck the Synod's advice. But you... You are the soul of what it means to be Terrace. So calm, so humble, so careful and respectful. So wise. Why are you the one who consistently defies our leaders? It doesn't make sense.
I am not so wise as you think, Tyndall, Sacid said quietly. I am simply a man who must do as he believes. Right now, I believe there to be a danger in the mists, and I must investigate my impressions. Perhaps it is simply arrogance and foolishness, but I would rather be known as arrogant and foolish than risk danger to the people of this land.
You will find nothing.
Then I will be proven wrong, Sacid said. He turned, looking into her eyes. But kindly remember that the last time I disobeyed the Synod. The result was the collapse of the final empire and the freedom of our people.
Tyndall made a tight-lipped frown. She didn't like being reminded of that fact. None of the Keepers did. They held that Sacid had been wrong to disobey, but they couldn't very well punish him for his success.
I don't understand you, she repeated quietly. You should be a leader among our people, Sacid. Not our greatest rebel and dissident. Everyone wants to look up to you, but they can't. Must you defy every order you are given?
He smiled wanly, but did not answer. Tyndall sighed, rising. She walked toward the door, but paused, taking his hand as she passed. She looked into his eyes for a moment. Then he removed the hand. She shook her head and left.
He commanded kings, and though he sought no empire, he became greater than all who had come before.
24. Something is going on, Vin thought, sitting in the mists atop Keep Venture. Sacid was not prone to exaggeration. He was meticulous. That much showed in his mannerisms, his cleanliness, and even the way he spoke. And he was even more meticulous when it came to his studies. Vin was inclined to believe his discoveries. And she'd certainly seen things in the mists. Dangerous things. Could the mist spirit explain the deaths Sacid had encountered?
But if that's the case, why didn't Sacid speak of figures in the mist?
She sighed, closing her eyes and burning bronze. She could hear the spirit watching nearby. And she could hear it again as well, the strange thumping in the distance. She opened her eyes, leaving her bronze on, and quietly unfolded something from her pocket. A sheet from the logbook. By the light from Ellen's balcony below, and with Tin, she could easily read the words. "I sleep but a few hours each night. We must press forward, traveling as much as we can each day. But when I finally lie down, I find sleep elusive. The same thoughts that trouble me during the day are only compounded by the stillness of night. And above it all, I hear the thumping sounds from above, the pulsings from the mountains, drawing me closer with each beat." She shivered. She had asked Clubs to burn bronze, and he had claimed to hear nothing from the north. Either he was the Chandra, lying to her about his ability to burn bronze, or Vin could hear a rhythm that nobody else could. Nobody except a man 1,000 years dead. A man everyone had assumed was the hero of ages.
"You're being silly," she told herself, refolding the paper. "Jumping to conclusions."
To her side, Orsia rustled, lying quietly and staring out over the city. And yet she kept thinking of Sazed's words. Something was happening with the mists. Something was wrong. Zane didn't find her atop Keep Hasting. He stopped in the mists, standing quietly. He'd expected to find her waiting, for this was the place of their last fight. Even thinking of the event made him tense with anticipation. During the months of sparring, they had always met again at the place where he'd eventually lost her. Yet he'd returned to this location on several nights, and had never found her. He frowned, thinking of Straff's orders, and of necessity. Eventually, he would likely be ordered to kill this girl. He wasn't certain what bothered him more, his growing reluctance to consider such an act, or his growing worry that he might not actually be able to beat her. "She could be it," he thought. "The thing that finally lets me resist. The thing that convinces me to just leave." He couldn't explain why he needed a reason. Part of him simply ascribed it to his insanity, though the rational part of him felt that was a weak excuse. Deep down, he admitted that Straff was all he had ever known. Zane wouldn't be able to leave until he knew he had someone else to rely on. He turned away from Keep Hasting. He'd had enough of waiting. It was time to seek her out. Zane threw a coin, bounding across the city for a time. And sure enough, there she was, sitting atop Keep Venture, watching over his foolish brother. Zane rounded the keep, keeping far enough away that even Tin-enhanced eyes wouldn't see him. He landed on the back of the keep's roof, then walked forward quietly. He approached, watching her sit on the edge of the roof. The air was silent. Finally, she turned around, jumping slightly. He swore that she could sense him when she shouldn't be able to. Either way, he was discovered.
"Zane,"
Vin said flatly, easily identifying the silhouette. He wore his customary black-on-black with no mist cloak.
"I've been waiting," he said quietly. "Atop Keep Hasting, hoping you'd come."
She sighed, careful to keep an eye on him, but relaxing slightly.
"I'm not really in the mood for sparring right now."
He watched her.
"Pity," he finally said.
He walked over, prompting Vin to rise cautiously to her feet. He paused beside the lip of the rooftop, looking down at Ellen's lit balcony. Vin glanced at Orsir. He was tense, alternately watching her and Zane.
"You're so worried about him," Zane said quietly. "Ellen?" Vin asked.
Zane nodded.
"Even though he uses you." "We've had this discussion, Zane. He isn't using me."
Zane looked up at her, meeting her eyes, standing straight-backed and confident in the night.
"He's so strong," she thought, "so sure of himself. So different from..."
She stopped herself. Zane turned away.
"Tell me, Vin," he said, "when you were younger, did you ever wish for power?"
Vin cocked her head, frowning at the strange question.
"What do you mean?"
"You grew up on the streets," Zane said. "When you were younger, did you wish for power? Did you dream of having the ability to free yourself, to kill those who brutalized you?"
"Of course I did," Vin said.
"And now you have that power," Zane said. "What would the child Vin say if she could see you? A mistborn who is bent and bowed by the weight of another's will? Powerful, yet somehow still subservient?"
"I'm a different person now, Zane," Vin said. "I'd like to think that I've learned things since I was a child."
"I've found that a child's instincts are often the most honest," Zane said. "The most natural." Vin didn't respond. Zane turned quietly, looking out over the city, seemingly unconcerned that he was exposing his back to her. Vin eyed him, then dropped a coin. It plinked against the metal rooftop, and he immediately glanced back toward her.
"No," she thought, "he doesn't trust me."
He turned away again, and Vin watched him. She did understand what he meant, for she had once thought as he did. Idly, she wondered what kind of person she might have become if she'd gained full access to her powers without, at the same time, learning of friendship and trust from Kelsier's crew.
"What would you do, Vin?" Zane asked, turning back toward her. "Assuming you didn't have any constraints. Assuming there were no repercussions for your actions."
"Go north." The thought was immediate. "Find out what is causing that thumping."
She didn't say it, however.
"I don't know," she said instead.
He turned, eyeing her.
"You aren't taking me seriously, I see. I apologize for wasting your time."
He turned to go, walking directly between her and Orsieur. Vin watched him and felt a sudden stab of concern. He'd come to her, willing to talk rather than just fight, and she'd wasted the opportunity. She was never going to turn him to her side if she didn't talk to him.
"You want to know what I'd do?"
she asked, her voice ringing in the silent mists. Zane paused.
"If I could just use my power as I wanted?" Vin asked. "No repercussions?" "I'd protect him."
"Your king?" Zane asked, turning. Vin nodded sharply.
"These men who brought armies against him. Your master, this man named Set. I'd kill them. I'd use my power to make certain that nobody could threaten Elend."
Zane nodded quietly, and she saw respect in his eyes.
"And why don't you?"
"Because..."
"I see the confusion in your eyes," Zane said. "You know that your instincts to kill those men are right. Yet you hold back. Because of him."
"There would be repercussions, Zane," Vin said. "If I killed those men, their armies might just attack. Right now, diplomacy could still work."
"Perhaps," Zane said. "Until he asks you to go kill someone for him."
Vin snorted.
"Elend doesn't work that way. He doesn't give me orders, and the only people I kill are the ones who try to kill him first."
"Oh?" Zane said. "You may not act at his order, Vin, but you certainly refrain from action at it. You are his toy. I don't say this to insult you. You see, I'm as much a toy as you are. Neither of us can break free. Not alone."
Suddenly the coin Vin had dropped snapped into the air, flying toward Zane. She tensed, but it simply streaked into Zane's waiting hand.
"It's interesting," he said, turning the coin in his fingers. Many Mistborn stop seeing the value in coins. To us, they simply become something to be used for jumping. It's easy to forget the value of something when you use it so often. When it becomes commonplace and convenient to you. When it becomes just a tool. He flipped the coin up, then shot it out into the night. I must go, he said, turning. Vin raised a hand. Seeing him use allomancy made her realize that there was another reason she wanted to speak with him. It had been so long since she'd talked with another Mistborn, one who understood her powers, someone like her. But it seemed to her that she was too desperate for him to stay. So she let him go and returned to her vigil. He fathered no children, yet all of the land became his progeny. 25. Vin was a very light sleeper, a heritage from her youth. Thieving crews worked together out of necessity, and any man who couldn't guard his own possessions was considered to be unworthy of them. Vin, of course, had been at the very bottom of the hierarchy, and while she hadn't had many possessions to protect, being a young girl in a primarily male environment gave her other reasons to be a light sleeper. So it was that when she awoke to a quiet bark of warning, she reacted without thinking. She tossed off her covers, reaching immediately for the vial on her bedstand. She didn't sleep with metals inside of her. Many of the allomantic metals were, to some small extent, poisonous. It was unavoidable that she'd have to deal with some of that danger, but she had been warned to burn away excess metals at the end of each day. She downed this vial even as she reached for the obsidian daggers hidden beneath her pillow. The door to her sleeping chamber swung open, and Tyndall walked in. The terrace woman froze in mid-step as she saw Vin crouching on the bed's footboard a few feet away, twin daggers glistening, body tense. Tyndall raised an eyebrow. So you are awake. Now? The terrace woman smiled. What are you doing in my rooms? Vin demanded. I came to wake you. I thought we might go shopping. Shopping? Yes, dear, Tyndall said, walking over to pull open the curtains. It was far earlier in the day than Vin usually rose. From what I hear, you're going to meet with His Majesty's father on the morrow. You'll want a suitable dress for the occasion, I assume. I don't wear dresses anymore. What is your game? Tyndall turned, eyeing Vin. You sleep in your clothing? Vin nodded. You don't keep any ladies in waiting? Vin shook her head. Very well, then, Tyndall said, turning to walk from the room. Bathe and change. We'll leave when you're ready. I don't take commands from you. Tyndall paused by the door, turning. Then her face softened. I know you don't, child. You may come with me if you wish. The choice is yours. However, do you really want to meet with Straff Venture in trousers and a shirt? Vin hesitated. At least come browse, Tyndall said. It will help take your mind off of things. Finally, Vin nodded. Tyndall smiled again, then left. Vin glanced at Orsir, who sat beside her bed. Thanks for the warning. The Chandra shrugged. Once, Vin wouldn't have been able to imagine living in a place like Keep Venture. The young Vin had been accustomed to hidden lairs, ska hovels, and the occasional alley. Now she lived in a building bespeckled with stained glass, bounded by mighty walls and grand archways. Of course, Vin thought as she left the stairwell, many things have happened that I didn't expect. Why think about them now? Her youth in the thieving crews had been much on her mind of late, and Zane's comments, ridiculous though they were, itched in her mind. Did Vin belong in a place like this keep?
She had a great many skills, but few of them were beautiful hallway kinds of skills. They were more ash-stained alleyway kinds of skills. She sighed, Orsure at her side, as she made her way to the southern entryway, where Tyndall said she would be waiting. The hallway here grew wide and grand and opened directly into the courtyard. Usually coaches came right up into the entryway to pick up their occupants, that way the noblemen wouldn't be exposed to the elements. As she approached, her tin let her hear voices. One was Tyndall, the other...
"I didn't bring much," Aurianne said. "A couple hundred boxings. But I do so need something to wear. I can't survive on borrowed gowns forever."
Vin paused as she turned into the last part of the hallway.
"The king's gift will surely be enough to pay for a dress, dear," Tyndall said, noticing Vin. "Ah, here she is."
A sullen-looking spook stood with the two women. He had on his palace guard's uniform, though he wore the jacket undone and the trousers loose. Vin walked forward slowly.
"I wasn't expecting company," she said. "Young Aurianne was trained as a courtly noblewoman," Tyndall said. "She will know the current fashions, and will be able to advise on your purchases."
"And Spook?" Tyndall turned, eyeing the boy.
"Pac-Man."
"Well, that explains his mood," Vin thought.
"Come,"
Tyndall said, walking toward the courtyard. Aurianne followed quickly, walking with a light, graceful step. Vin glanced at Spook, who shrugged, and they followed as well.
"How did you get pulled into this?" Vin whispered to Spook.
"Was up too early, sneaking food," Spook grumbled. "Miss Imposing there noticed me, smiled like a wolfhound and said, 'We'll be needing your services this afternoon, young man.'"
Vin nodded.
"Stay alert and keep your tin burning. Remember we're at war."
Spook obediently did what she said. Standing close to him as she was, Vin easily picked up and identified his tin's alimentic pulses, meaning he wasn't the spy.
"Another one off the list," Vin thought. "At least this trip won't be a total waste."
A coach waited for them by the front keep gates. Spook climbed up beside the coachman and the women piled into the back. Vin sat down inside and Orsure climbed in and took the seat next to her. Aurianne and Tyndall sat across from her, and Aurianne eyed Orsure with a frown, wrinkling her nose.
"Does the animal have to sit on the seats with us?"
"Yes," Vin said as the carriage started moving. Aurianne obviously expected more of an explanation, but Vin didn't give one. Finally, Aurianne turned to look out the window.
"Are you sure we'll be safe, traveling with only one manservant, Tyndall?"
Tyndall eyed Vin.
"Oh, I think that we'll be all right." "Oh, that's right," Aurianne said, looking back at Vin. "You're an allomancer. Are the things they say true?"
"What things?" Vin asked quietly.
"Well, they say you killed the Lord Ruler for one, and that you're kind of, well..."
Aurianne bit her lip.
"Well, just a little bit rickety."
"Rickety?"
"And dangerous," Aurianne said. "But, well, that can't be true. I mean, you're going shopping with us, right?"
"Is she trying to provoke me on purpose?"
"Do you always wear clothing like that?"
Aurianne asked. Vin was in her standard gray trousers and tan shirt.
"It's easy to fight in." "Yes, but..." "Well..."
Aurianne smiled.
"I guess that's why we're here today, right, Tyndall?"
"Yes, dear," Tyndall said. She'd been studying Vin through the entire conversation.
"Like what you see," Vin thought. "What is it you want?" "You have to be the strangest noblewoman I've ever met," Aurianne declared. "Did you grow up far from court?" "I did, but my mother was quite certain to train me well. Of course, she was just trying to make me into a good catch so father could auction me off to make an alliance."
Aurianne smiled. It had been a while since Vin had been forced to deal with women like her. She remembered hours spent at court, smiling, pretending to be Valette Renou. Often when she thought of those days, she remembered the bad things, the spite she'd faced from court members, her own lack of comfort in the role. But there had also been good things. Elland was one. She would never have met him if she hadn't been pretending to be a noblewoman. And the balls, with their colors, their music, and their gowns, had held a certain transfixing charm. The graceful dancing, the careful interactions, the perfectly decorated rooms.
"Those things are gone now," she told herself. "We don't have time for silly balls and gatherings, not when the dominance is on the verge of collapse."
Tyndall was still watching her.
"Well?"
Aurianne asked.
"What?"
Vin asked.
"Did you grow up far from court?"
"I'm not noble, Aurianne. I'm Ska."
Aurianne paled, then flushed, then raised her fingers to her lips.
"Oh, you poor thing."
Vin's augmented ears heard something beside her, a light chuckling from Orsure, soft enough that only an Allomancer could have heard him. She resisted the urge to shoot the Chandra a flat look.
"It wasn't so bad," she said. "But, well, no wonder you don't know how to dress," Aurianne said.
"I know how to dress," Vin said. "I even own a few gowns. Not that I've put one on in months."
Aurianne nodded, though she obviously didn't believe Vin's comment.
"Breezy is Ska, too," she said quietly. "Or half Ska. He told me. Good thing he didn't tell Father. Father never has been very nice to Ska."
Vin didn't reply. Eventually, they reached Kenton Street, and the crowds made the carriage a liability. Vin climbed out first, Orsure hopping down to the cobblestones beside her. The market street was busy, though not as packed as it had been the last time she'd visited. Vin glanced over the prices at some nearby shops as the others exited the coach.
5 boxings for a bin of aging apples, Vin thought with dissatisfaction. Food is already going at a premium.
Elland had stores, fortunately, but how long would they last before the siege? Not through the approaching winter, certainly. Not with so much of the Dominance's grain still unharvested in the outer plantations.
Time may be our friend now, Vin thought, but it will turn on us eventually.
They had to get those armies to fight each other. Otherwise, the city's people might die of starvation before the soldiers even tried to take the walls. Spook hopped down from the carriage, joining them as Tyndall surveyed the street. Vin eyed the bustling crowds. The people were obviously trying to go about their daily activities despite the threat from outside. What else could they do? The siege had already lasted for weeks. Life had to go on.
"There,"
Tyndall said, pointing to a dressmaker's shop. Aurianne scampered forward. Tyndall followed behind, walking with modest decorum.
"Eager young thing, isn't she?" the terrace woman asked.
Vin shrugged. The blonde noblewoman had already gotten Spook's attention. He was following her with a lively step. Of course, it wasn't hard to get Spook's attention. You just had to have breasts and smell nice. And the second was sometimes optional. Tyndall smiled.
"She probably hasn't had an opportunity to go shopping since she left with her father's army weeks ago."
"You sound like you think she went through some awful ordeal," Vin said. "Just because she couldn't go shopping."
"She obviously enjoys it," Tyndall said. "Surely you can understand being taken from that which you love."
Vin shrugged as they reached the shop.
"I have trouble feeling sympathy for a courtly puff who is tragically taken from her dresses."
Tyndall frowned slightly as they entered the shop, Orsure settling down to wait outside.
"Do not be so hard on the child. She is a product of her upbringing, just as you are. If you judge her worth based on frivolities, then you are doing the same as those who judge you based on your simple clothing." "I like it when people judge me based on my simple clothing," Vin said. "Then they don't expect too much."
I see, Tyndall said. Then you haven't missed this at all?
She nodded toward the shop's inner room. Vin paused. The room burst with colors and fabric, lace and velvet, bodices and skirts. Everything was powdered with a light perfume. Standing before the dressing dummies in their brilliant hues, Vin was, for just a moment, again taken back to the balls, back to when she was Valette, back to when she had an excuse to be Valette.
"They say you enjoyed noble society," Tyndall said lightly, walking forward.
Oriane was already standing near the front of the room, running her fingers across a bolt of fabric, talking to the dressmaker in a firm voice.
"Who told you that?" Vin asked.
Tyndall turned back.
"Why, your friends, dear. It's quite curious. They say you stopped wearing dresses a few months after the collapse. They all wonder why. They say you seemed to like dressing like a woman. But I guess they were wrong."
"No," Vin said quietly. "They were right."
Tyndall raised an eyebrow, pausing beside a dressmaker's dummy in a bright green dress, edged with lace, the bottom flaring wide with several underskirts. Vin approached, looking up at the gorgeous costume.
"I was beginning to like dressing like this. That was the problem." "I don't see a problem in that, dear."
Vin turned away from the gown.
"This isn't me. It never was. It was just an act. When wearing a dress like that, it's too easy to forget who you really are. And these dresses can't be part of who you really are?"
Vin shook her head.
"Dresses and gowns are part of who she is."
She nodded toward Alrianne.
"I need to be something else, something harder. I shouldn't have come here."
Tyndall laid a hand on Vin's shoulder.
"Why haven't you married him, child?"
Vin looked up sharply.
"What kind of question is that?" "An honest one," Tyndall said.
She seemed far less harsh than she had been the other times Vin had met her. Of course, during those times, she had mostly been addressing Elland.
"That topic is not your concern," Vin said. "The king has asked me to help him improve his image," Tyndall said. "And I have taken it upon myself to do more than that. I want to make a real king of him, if I can. There is some great potential in him, I think. However, he's not going to be able to realize it until he's more sure about certain things in his life. You, in particular."
"I..."
Vin closed her eyes, remembering his marriage proposal. That night, on the balcony, ash lightly falling in the night. She remembered her terror. She'd known, of course, where the relationship was going. Why had she been so frightened? That was the day she'd stopped wearing dresses.
"He shouldn't have asked me," Vin said quietly, opening her eyes. "He can't marry me." "He loves you, child," Tyndall said. "In a way that is unfortunate. This would all be much easier if he could feel otherwise. However, as things stand..."
Vin shook her head.
"I'm wrong for him."
"Ah,"
Tyndall said.
"I see." "He needs something else," Vin said. "Something better. A woman who can be a queen, not just a bodyguard. Someone..."
Vin's stomach twisted.
"Someone more like her."
Tyndall glanced toward Alrianne, who laughed at a comment made by the elderly dressmaker as he took her measurements.
"You are the one he fell in love with, child," Tyndall said. "When I was pretending to be like her..."
Tyndall smiled.
"Somehow I doubt that you could be like Alrianne, no matter how hard you practiced."
"Perhaps," Vin said.
"Either way, it was my courtly performance that he loved. He didn't know what I really was." "And has he abandoned you, now that he does know of it?" Well, no, but all people are more complex than they first appear, Tyndall said. Aurianne, for instance, is eager and young, perhaps a bit too outspoken. But she knows more of the court than many would expect, and she seems to know how to recognize what is good in a person. That is a talent many lack. Your king is a humble scholar and thinker, but he has the will of a warrior. He is a man who has the nerve to fight, and I think, perhaps, you have yet to see the best of him. The Soother Breeze is a cynical, mocking man, until he looks at young Aurianne. Then he softens, and one wonders how much of his harsh unconcern is an act.
Tyndall paused, looking at Vin.
And you... You are so much more than you are willing to accept, child. Why look at only one side of yourself, when your Elend sees so much more? Is that what this is all about? Vin said. You trying to turn me into a queen for Elend? No, child, Tyndall said. I wish to help you turn into whoever you are. Now, go let the man take your measurements, so you can try on some stock dresses. Whoever I am, Vin thought, frowning.
However, she let the tall terrace woman push her forward, and the elderly dressmaker took his tape and began to measure. A few moments and a changing room later, Vin stepped back into the room wearing a memory. Silky blue with white lace, the gown was tight at the waist and through the bust, but had a large, flowing bottom. The numerous skirts made it flare out, tapering down in a triangular shape, her feet completely covered, the bottom of the skirt flush with the floor. It was terribly impractical. It rustled when she moved, and she had to be careful where she stepped to keep it from catching or brushing a dirty surface. But it was beautiful, and it made her feel beautiful. She almost expected a band to start playing, Sazed to stand over her shoulder like a protective sentry, and Elend to appear in the distance, lounging and watching couples dance as he flipped through a book. Vin walked forward, letting the dressmaker watch where the garment pinched and where it bunched. And Aurianne let out an ooh as she saw Vin. The old dressmaker leaned on his cane, dictating notes to a young assistant.
"Move around a bit more, my lady," he requested. "Let me see how it fits when you do more than just walk in a straight line."
Vin spun slightly, turning on one foot, trying to remember the dancing moves Sazed had taught her.
"I never did get to dance with Elend," she realized, stepping to the side as if to music she could only faintly remember. "He always found an excuse to wiggle out of it."
She twirled, getting a feel for the dress. She would have thought that her instincts would have decayed. Now that she had one on again, however, she was surprised at how easy it was to fall back into those habits. Stepping lightly, turning so that the bottom of the dress flared just a bit. She paused. The dressmaker was no longer dictating. He watched her quietly, smiling.
"What?" Vin asked, flushing. "I'm sorry, m'lady," he said, turning to tap on his assistant's notebook, sending the boy away with the point of his finger. "But I don't rightly think I've ever seen someone move so gracefully. Like a passing breath." "You flatter me," Vin said. "No, child," Tyndall said, standing to the side. "He's right. You move with a grace that most women can only envy."
The dressmaker smiled again, turning as his assistant approached with a group of square cloth color samples. The old man began to sort through them with a wizened hand, and Vin stepped over to Tyndall, holding her hands at the sides, trying not to let the traitorous dress take control of her again.
"Why are you being so nice to me?" Vin demanded quietly. "Why shouldn't I be?" Tyndall asked. "Because you're mean to Elend," Vin said. "Don't deny it. I've listened in on your lessons. You spend the time insulting and disparaging him. But now you're pretending to be nice."
Tyndall smiled.
"I'm not pretending, child." "Then why are you so mean to Elend?" "The lad grew up as a pampered son of a great lord," Tyndall said, Now that he's king, he needs a little harsh truth, I think.
She paused, glancing down at Vin.
I sense that you've had quite enough of that in your life.
The dressmaker approached with his swatches, spreading them out on a low table.
Now, m'lady, he said, tapping one group with a bent finger, I think your coloring would look particularly good with dark cloth. A nice maroon, perhaps?
What about a black? Vin asked.
Heavens, no, Tyndall said. Absolutely no more black or gray for you, child.
What about this one, then? Vin asked, pulling out a royal blue swatch. It was nearly the shade she'd worn the first night she'd met Elland so long ago.
Ah, yes, the dressmaker said. That would look wonderful against that light skin and dark hair. Yes. Now we'll have to pick a style. You need this by tomorrow evening, the terrace woman said.
Vin nodded.
Ah, then. We'll have to modify one of the stock dresses, but I think I have one in this color. We'll have to take it in quite a bit, but we can work through the night for a beauty like yourself, can't we, lad? Now, as for the style.
This is fine, I guess, Vin said, looking down.
The gown was the standard cut of those she'd worn at previous balls.
Well, we're not looking for fine now, are we? The dressmaker said with a smile. What if we removed some of the pettiskirts? Tyndall said, pulling at the sides of Vin's dress. And perhaps raised the hem just a bit, so that she could move more freely?
Vin paused.
You could do that?
Of course, the dressmaker said. The lad says thinner skirts are more popular to the south, though they tend to lag in fashion a bit behind Luthadel.
He paused.
Though I don't know that Luthadel even really has a fashion any more.
Make cuffs of the sleeves wide, Tyndall said, and sew a couple of pockets into them for certain personal items.
The old man nodded as his quiet assistant scribbled down the suggestion.
The chest and waist can be tight, Tyndall continued, but not restrictive. Lady Vin needs to be able to move freely.
The old man paused.
Lady Vin? He asked.
He looked a little closer at Vin, squinting, then turned to his assistant. The boy nodded quietly.
I see, the man said, paling, hand shaking just a little bit more.
He placed it on top of his cane as if to give himself a little more stability.
I'm sorry if I offended you, m'lady. I didn't know.
Vin flushed.
Another reason why I shouldn't go shopping.
No, she said, reassuring the man. It's all right. You haven't offended me.
He relaxed slightly, and Vin noticed Spook strolling over.
Looks like we've been found, Spook said, nodding to the front windows.
Vin glanced past dressing dummies and bales of cloth to see a crowd gathering outside. Tyndall watched Vin with curiosity. Spook shook his head.
Why did you get to be so popular?
I killed their god, Vin said quietly, ducking around a dressing dummy, hiding from the dozens of peeking eyes.
I helped too, Spook said. I even got my nickname from Kelsier himself. But nobody cares about poor little Spook.
Vin scanned the room for windows.
There's got to be a back door. Of course there might be people in the alley.
What are you doing?
Tyndall asked.
I have to go, Vin said. Get away from them.
Why don't you go out and talk to them?
Tyndall asked.
They're obviously very interested in seeing you.
Aurianne emerged from a dressing room, wearing a gown of yellow and blue, and twirled dramatically. She was obviously put out when she didn't even get Spook's attention.
I'm not going out there, Vin said. Why would I want to do something like that?
They need hope, Tyndall said. Hope you can give them.
A false hope, Vin said.
I'd only encourage them to think of me as some object of worship. That's not true, Aurianne said suddenly, walking forward, looking out the windows without the least bit of embarrassment. Hiding in corners, wearing strange clothing, and being mysterious, that's what has gotten you this amazing reputation. If people knew how ordinary you were, they wouldn't be so crazy to get a look at you.
She paused, then looked back.
I didn't mean that like I think it sounded.
Vin flushed.
I'm not Kelsier, Tyndall. I don't want people to worship me. I just want to be left alone.
Some people don't have that choice, child, Tyndall said. You struck down the Lord Ruler. You were trained by the Survivor. And you are the King's consort.
I'm not his consort, Vin said, flushing. We're just...
Lord, even I don't understand our relationship. How am I supposed to explain it?
Tyndall raised an eyebrow. All right, Vin said, sighing and walking forward.
I'll go with you,
Aurianne said, grabbing Vin's arm as if they had been friends since childhood. Vin resisted, but couldn't figure a way to pry her off without making a scene. They stepped out of the shop. The crowd was already large, and the periphery was filling as more and more people came to investigate. Most were ska in brown, ash-stained work coats or simple gray dresses. The ones in the front backed away as Vin stepped out, giving her a little ring of empty space, and a murmur of awed excitement moved through the crowd.
"Wow," Aurianne said quietly. "There sure are a lot of them."
Vin nodded. Orsir sat where he had before, near the door, and he watched her with a curious canine expression. Aurianne smiled at the crowd, waving with a sudden hesitance.
"You can, you know, fight them off or something if this turns messy, right?"
"That won't be necessary," Vin said, finally slipping her arm free of Aurianne's grasp and giving the crowd a bit of a soothing to calm them.
After that, she stepped forward, trying to push down her sense of itching nervousness. She'd grown to no longer feel she needed to hide when she went out in public, but standing before a crowd like this, well, she almost turned and slinked back into the dressmaker's shop. A voice, however, stopped her. The speaker was a middle-aged man with an ash-stained beard and a dirty black cap held nervously in his hands. He was a strong man, probably a mill worker. His quiet voice seemed a contrast to his powerful build.
"Lady Eyre, what will become of us?"
The terror, the uncertainty in the large man's voice was so piteous that Vin hesitated. He regarded her with hopeful eyes, as did most of the others.
"So many," Vin thought. "I thought the Church of the Survivor was small."
She looked at the man, who stood wringing his cap. She opened her mouth, but then couldn't do it. She couldn't tell him that she didn't know what would happen. She couldn't explain to those eyes that she wasn't the savior that he needed.
"Everything will be all right," Vin heard herself say, increasing her soothing, trying to take away some of their fear. "But the armies, Lady Eyre," one of the women said.
"They're trying to intimidate us," Vin said. "But the king won't let them. Our walls are strong, as are our soldiers. We can outlast this siege."
The crowd was silent.
"One of those armies is led by Ellen's father, Straff Venture," Vin said. "Ellen and I are going to meet with Straff tomorrow. We will persuade him to be our ally." "The king is going to surrender," a voice said. "I heard it. He's going to trade the city for his life."
"No," Vin said. "He would never do that."
"He won't fight for us," a voice called. "He's not a soldier, he's a politician."
Other voices called out in agreement. Reverence disappeared as people began to yell out concerns, while others began to demand help. The dissidents continued to rail against Elland, yelling that there was no way he could protect them. Vin raised her hands to her ears, trying to ward off the crowd, the chaos.
"Stop!"
she yelled, pushing out with steel and brass. Several people stumbled back away from her, and she could see a wave in the crowd as buttons, coins, and buckles suddenly pressed backward. The people grew suddenly quiet.
"I will suffer no ill words spoken of our king," Vin said,
flaring her brass and increasing her soothing.
"He is a good man, and a good leader. He has sacrificed much for you.
Your freedom comes because of his long hours spent drafting laws. And your livelihoods come because of his work securing trade routes and agreements with merchants.
Many members of the crowd looked down. The bearded man at the front continued to twist his cap, however, looking at Vin.
They're just frightened, Lady Eyre. Right frightened.
We'll protect you, Vin said.
What am I saying?
Ellen and I, we'll find a way. We stop the Lord Ruler, we can stop these armies.
She trailed off, feeling foolish. Yet the crowd responded. Some were obviously still unsatisfied, but many seemed calmed. The crowd began to break up, though some of its members came forward, leading or carrying small children. Vin paused nervously. Kelsier had often met with and held the children of the Ska, as if giving them his blessing. She bid the group a hasty farewell and ducked back into the shop, pulling Aurean after her. Tyndall waited inside, nodding with satisfaction.
I lied, Vin said, pushing the door closed.
No, you didn't, Tyndall said. You were optimistic. The truth or fiction of what you said has yet to be proven.
It won't happen, Vin said. Ellen can't defeat three armies, not even with my help.
Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
Then you should leave. Run away. Leave the people to deal with the armies themselves.
I didn't mean that, Vin said.
Well, make a decision then, Tyndall said. Either give up on the city, or believe in it. Honestly, the pair of you.
She shook her head.
I thought you weren't going to be harsh with me, Vin noted.
I have trouble with that sometimes, Tyndall said.
Come, Aurean, let's finish your fitting.
They moved to do so. However, at that moment, as if to belie Vin's assurances of safety, several warning drums began to beat atop the city wall. Vin froze, glancing through the window, out over the anxious crowd.